What's up, everyone? I am Brandon Hay at HayB3, and you have just joined What the Fantasy.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Zadeh Kantabedian. I'm at ZKantsFF on Twitter, and Merry Football Season's Eve. How are you, Brandon?
I am very good. I feel like I didn't have quite the day that you did.
No, I took it upon myself to have a day because I deserve it. So I'm going to have one. I went to the beach. I bought some Modelo Especial Michelada Tall Boys and started drinking about 1 o'clock on the beach, came inside, passed out unexpectedly, woke up 15 minutes before the show started, splashed myself, took a bird bath, made some 8-hour-old coffee, and let's talk some football now. And we're there. We're there, dude.
We definitely are. So we're going to, we talked about this last week, but we're going to start off with my draft for my fantasy league. It's touchdown only league, a little background. So the commissioner of it, I would say a few months ago, I just got a random Facebook message, and he was like, I have this league, and it's been going on for like 25 years. We've had 10 people. We want to move it to 12, you know, just looking for people in Jacksonville. I called and talked to him. He sounded okay. So, you know, I joined the league and everything. So that's how did it. We went to this one guy's house in actually in Fleming Island in Jacksonville. So it was like a 30-minute drive for me. That'll come into the story later, a little foreshadowing. But so I went over there. Everyone's supposed to bring some food. And then we did the actual draft. We had actual draft boards and stickers. So it was, you know, the cool live way. So you had to walk up there and do that and everything. So there's 12 people in this league. And just on the note, you asked about the two defenses and the two kickers. The reason is they do something weird where they set the amount you have to have at each position. So you have to have 2 quarterbacks, 5 running backs, 5 wide receivers, 2 tight ends, 2 defenses, and 2 kickers. So they set the actual numbers, which I don't love because I like flexibility. And, you know, if I wanted to get 9 receivers, I think I should be able to do that. But they did that. So that's the reasoning behind that. So let me actually share my screen. Okay, so as I said, it was a live draft, so I could only write down like the first like 10 rounds, how it kind of went. And this is how my team went. So I got Justin Jefferson first, came back around, got Mike Evans, then got Brady, then Allen Robinson, then went with running back with Swift, and then Pierce, got Freiermuth after that. Ended up later with the Chiefs kicker Harrison Butker, the 49ers defense, because they played the Bears the first week. Running backs were kind of thin because I waited. So I got Tyler Algier, Michael Carter, Hassan Haskins, Gerald Everett, backup tight end, Justin Fields, who we both love, who I think is the, you know, a great upside, you know, opposite Brady, because he'll give that rushing ability, and Darnell Mooney and Elijah Moore, who I really like. So before I continue with the story of the draft, what do you think of this team? Obviously, it's a little different thinking since it's a touchdown-only league.
I mean, I think it's a very good league. It's how many teams? 10 teams? 12?
12.
Yeah, that's really good for a 12-team league, man. You did a really good job. I mean, I'm surprised you got DeAndre Swift, from what you said, it sounds like you got DeAndre Swift in the 4th round.
I actually think I got him later than that.
You must have had to get him 2nd round, right?
No. He dropped.
Why?
I guess touchdown only. I guess people didn't believe in the Lions.
Okay.
I got him in the 4th round. Yeah, I got him in the 4th round. So I was very happy with that. As you look at this, what I originally thought was when I picked at 10, I was going to take a quarterback, and I figured it was going to be, you know, someone maybe like Jalen Hurts. And then I crunched some numbers because in this league, you get double points if a quarterback runs it in. If a running back catches it or throws it, you get double points. So I did that, and while it moved Jalen Hurts into the further up, It's still, you know, even those double points only moved him up so far. So the quarterbacks that throw over 40 touchdowns were really the ones you wanted. So when I saw only three quarterbacks go before me, that's when I switched and decided to go wide receiver. And then I did wide receiver again with Mike Evans. And then I wanted to get that stack with Tom Brady. And then, you know, I kind of addressed the rest. I think Allen Robinson is going to be really big for them. Freiermuth, I wanted to get Goddard, but he went before me. So Freiermuth, I think, could be fairly good, you know, touchdown-wise. I've never done a touchdown-only league, so this is really going to be a test for me how this all went.
Yeah, well, am I on mute? I played touchdown-only leagues for my first 2 or 4 years playing fantasy football, so I have some experience playing them. And, I mean, like, I can, like, say Tyler Allgeier is a really good addition for a touchdown-only league, because that's literally what he's probably only going to do, like, later on in the season. He'll probably supplant Damien Williams and be their goal line short yardage guy. Hassan Haskins, same thing. I mean, if takes over for Derrick Henry, he's going to be that guy most likely if he beats out Julius Chestnut. And Justin Fields is, you know, obviously he's going to run for some touchdowns. So, yeah, I think it's a really good team, very stable team for a touchdown-only format, you know. And yeah. Damian Pierce, he'll probably be ranked high in touchdown-only leagues. So, yeah, it's a very good team. I like what you did there. Tell us about – you want to talk about the edible or
– Yes, let's talk about that. So we had there's a message board. Everyone was saying what they were going to bring. Someone said they were going to bring brownies, and I asked, are they going to be special brownies? Then someone else said – well, he said no. But then another person said, I'm going to bring lots of special treats. And did he ever? Whole thing, you know, of a Tupperware thing of, I guess he has his company, all kinds of different things, gummies, cookies, brownies, Rice Krispie treats. So I pick up a cookie. And as I sit down at the table, he said, just so you know, and then he told me how much was in it. He said, you know, I just wanted to give you a heads up. And then I was like, well, maybe I should get the gummy. And then he was like, well, just eat a little bit and then, you know, see how you do. And then, you know, figure that out. So I was like, okay. The cookie was very good. Could not taste anything in it. And I proceeded to eat 2/3 of the cookie. Was fine. So I would say after probably around 8 is when it hit me very hard. And by very hard, I mean it lasted for probably a day and a half where I was totally out of sorts. So, you know, a couple of people were laughing because they said, like, they could tell it hit me because I just completely stopped talking because it was very hard for me to focus on anything. And the worst part was I had to get up each time to walk up and, you know, pick out the sticker and put it on the board. And I had to focus everything I had to walk straight and not fall over as I was going up there. And the funny thing is I only brought like 4 beers because since I was so far away, I did not want to drink too much. But in reality, I just got super, super, super fucking high and got that. So I ended up getting through the draft. I think a lot of the inputs, I really didn't know what I was doing, but it turned out all right. But I was so high from that. And then I stayed at this guy's house for like 2 extra hours because I was still so high.
Right.
And then I was going to meet my wife at this pool hall place or whatever, but it's like 35 minutes away. That was the longest 35-minute drive of my life. I was so focused, but it was still, it just seemed like it took forever. I was pretty much out of it the rest of that night. We stayed there to watch the college football game on Sunday night. And then even the next day, I slept a lot of that day. So needless to say, the edibles were very, very good. Totally changed my experience at the draft because it was like I could not hardly stand. And I did have some conversations with other people, surprisingly. But it was definitely a struggle the rest of the time.
Was that your first time trying edibles?
No, I've had gummies before, but okay. This and it was kind of like the same thing that I get that you know, just spaced out, and I always feel like I'm walking on clouds. So the first time I ever took an edible was at a casino in Maryland, and I got up and was walking around. I was telling my wife, I was like, it's like I'm floating on clouds. So I'm like walking like this because
you're taking edibles in all the wrong environments. You're taking them in like way these really public, like really like public, like a draft at a casino where it's all loud and overstimulated. I just lose my shit, especially at a draft where it's a bunch of people I don't know, I'm not comfortable with. You're like, I don't know these guys. Are they comfortable with me? Oh, holy crap, what am I doing here? Like, yeah, I know. Edibles are tough too because they just stay in your system for so long. Like, then you're just completely discombobulated the next day when you go to work. You're still like kind of confused. You can't think straight. And and the cookies are very strong for some reason. I don't know why, but in the cookie form, they're especially potent for some reason.
Yeah, I've never had anything other than a gummy.
Yeah, so, I have gummies downstairs. I use those for like anxiety and stuff like that. But I'll take half of a gummy if I'm feeling like stressed out and anxious. I take half of a gummy, put on some Lord of the Rings, shut the blinds. I don't answer the phone. I don't go outside. I don't talk to anybody. It's a very secluded thing for me to do.
So I met my wife. I gave her the other third of the cookie. And she had similar results. She went on a laughing spree at the bar for like at least a good 15 minutes.
That's funny, dude.
So the bartender was laughing at us because, you know, we're good friends with her. So it was a good night. But obviously, like you said, I need to not take these edibles at these environments that aren't conducive for me to succeed.
That's a good story, man. Thank you for sharing that. That's funny.
No problem. Hey,
your team out turned out really well, regardless of what happened.
Yeah, I really hope so. So,
if anything, it's a testament to how good of a drafter you are.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. So now let's get into some things for this week. First let's of all, go. we're going to talk about backfields to watch early in the season. So I'm going to start with my first. I feel like it's like this way every year, but the Eagles backfield. We've heard, you know, Kenny Gainwell has gotten some reps with the first team. I think he's looked good. But then in games, Boston Scott has been the first team when Miles Sanders has been hurt. Last I heard, he was still struggling with some injuries. Then they, you know, have Kennedy Brooks, and then they signed Trey Sermon, which just adds even more crap to that whole thing. Even though I think Gainwell could succeed in that role, I just don't know if they're going to give one person that role. I think it's just going to be a mess, all those different bats. You know, I could see Boston Scott not being active one game and then Gainwell not being active another game. I just think it's going to all change. I guess the only upside is if Trey Sermon can bring you back anything, if he can actually get on the field. So the Eagles are definitely one that – and add on top of that, Jalen Hurts' running ability, going to take away rushing touchdowns. So, you know, if I can, I want to stay away from that Eagles backfield until I see what's going
to
happen.
I like Boston Scott before Trey Sermon got there. I don't think Trey Sermon is really a threat to my Kenneth Gainwell, because Kenneth Gainwell is more of a pass catcher. He is a good runner, but yeah, he is more of a pass catcher. And I think we see the pass attempts on the Eagles regress back to more towards the league mean of pass attempts. Or they're not going to be so conservative with the run game now. That's just my opinion. But Trey Sermon over there now makes Boston Scott kind of like a useless waiver wire pickup, because Trey Sermon can easily come and split touches or take over that role. I think he's probably a better fit in that system than he was in San Francisco. So yeah, it's going to be one to watch, especially week one. I think he'll tell us a lot about what Sirianni wants to do. And we've seen Sirianni not take long to pivot from an originally of a game plan that he intended to do. Right. So we've seen him in 2021 come off this pass heavy game script that he, or this offense that he wanted to use in the first 2 weeks, use Kenneth Gainwell, saw Kenneth Gainwell be relevant, and then see the offense struggling and revert back to more of a run heavy offense. So it's important to see, like, not only what running backs are being used, I think, with the Eagles, but also how the offense is performing. Are they playing really well? Are they being efficient? Does it seem like a smooth transition to the passing game? If they are, I think that trend is more likely to continue with running backs of whatever we see. So, yeah, it's definitely one to watch. I agree. The one I've selected was the Patriots. I think Ramondre Stevenson and Damian Harris are going to be definitely – there are a couple of running backs that have been spoken about through this entire offseason. You know, a lot of people are talking about Ramondre Stevenson as a pass catcher, but Damian Harris actually was on the field for more passing down snaps and ran more routes than Ramondre Stevenson did. Granted, it was in two more, Damian Harris played in two more games than Ramondre Stevenson did. But I believe if Ramondre Stevenson, if you extrapolated it out, it broke even. So there's no one that really has the edge. In my opinion, I think Ramondre Stevenson is just a better receiver. He's just more smoother receiver. He just seems more natural at it. Damian Harris can do it, but he seems more clunky at it. So it's going to be one to watch. I like them both as runners. I think actually Damian Harris doesn't get enough credit for being a very physical runner. Ramondre Stevenson is a very physical runner. It takes more than one tackle. It's very hard to bring down, but Damian Harris is a very difficult guy to bring down in his own right. So I think a lot of people are underselling him a lot. I think the fantasy hype train has kind of run away. It's kind of gotten away from the practicality of the players, of how the football coaches see these players. So I think we're going to see more of an even split than we'd like to. I don't think it's going to be a Ramondre Stevenson runaway train. And, you know, Ty Montgomery, let's not forget about him. They clearly want to use him too.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I think Damian Harris is going to regress from the amount of touchdowns he had last year, but he's still going to be very involved from running the ball, between the 20s. Same with Stevenson. And I actually forgot about Ty Montgomery, but they have Pierre Strong, the rookie that they got. So I think normal Patriots type stuff, they're going to use all the running backs. I think the main two you obviously want are, Stevenson and Harris. But I could very easily see it be like a lot of teams, the hot hand type thing, who's running the ball better that game. So you won't know game to game. So that'll be very interesting. So my next team is actually the Jaguars. But just because, I don't know if it's just coach speak or whatever, but at least the words coming out, from the Jags is that James Robinson is pretty close to 100% and he can get his full workload. I just want to see that and how he does. Because if he does, it kind of changes everyone's thought about that backfield coming in, because no one really thought James Robinson would be healthy enough to get that, high workload. And it might change what ETN really gets running between the tackles. And then, obviously the backups kind of move themselves back even further. And if both are healthy, then they might run the ball more than we anticipated. Kind of limiting a little bit of the hype that we thought with Trevor. They're still going to have to pass the ball, but ETN might be in the slot more even than they even thought if James Robinson is healthy enough. Obviously, it'll be wear and tear through the season, so he might be healthy at the beginning. By the mid, might not be able to do that. But I think that's going to be very interesting what Peterson is going to do, because we've seen he loves to, run the ball and, split carries at times. So it'll be interesting what he does with the Jags.
Yeah, and you know how I feel about James Robinson and the whole Achilles thing. I mean, and it's not based on my opinion. It's just how I look at other. I mean, it's just every single licensed medical practitioner, doctor in the fantasy space says that the likelihood of returning to, his former 100% is the odds are low. So I mean, whatever 100% he's at now, I wish him the best. I hope he's back because he's one of the best players to watch run. But let's not also forget that they also signed Jamichael Hasty, who's a great receiving back out of that backfield. And the Niners probably had to cut reluctantly, I think. But, he served them really well. He's a fine runner for a smaller guy. He's a violent runner for a smaller guy, actually, too. And every time I scroll past Jamichael Hasty's name on the waiver wire, even in the deepest leagues, I'm like, man, he's one of those players that we'll talk about probably I should bring up in the next segment we're going to do in our thin slicing segment, because – He gives you that feeling of, man, I feel like he's going to be something, man. And moving on to the next backfield, we got the Arizona Cardinals backfield. We have James Conner, who's locked in as the RB1. But we have Eno Benjamin and Darrell Williams listed as co-starters on the unofficial depth chart of the Arizona Cardinals. I think Darrell Williams is going to be the RB2. Benjamin has been in the league for, multiple years now, for several years now. And Darrell Williams has been in the league just as long as Benjamin has, been so much more productive than Benjamin has. I was a fan of Eno coming out of Arizona. I still think he's a talented running back, but, Darrell Williams has proven to be a very reliable running back when called upon with the Chiefs. He's been reliable when Clyde Edwards has been injured. Darrell Williams has come in and filled in nicely as an early down back, as a receiving back, as a blocking back. He understands how to execute assignments. He's a veteran. He's just a solid guy. He's a coach's running back. So we'll see what happens with the snaps, but this backfield, either Benjamin or Darrell Williams are going to be one of the waiver wire darlings when week one is over.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I want to see how that goes. Obviously, with James Conner, injury history, he stayed pretty healthy last year, but most people don't believe it'll happen again. Do you think it was just rumor mill that it was said that Darrell Williams might get cut? Because I know there was some talk about that, but obviously he didn't.
Yeah, no, I heard that. I heard that he was going to get cut. He was in the bubble, but yeah, no, he's still there, and he's listed as the RB2 along with Eno Benjamin. He's still there, man.
Yeah, I still have Eno on a few teams, still holding out hope. Like you said, I really wanted him to do well, and he just hasn't gotten on the field, gotten a little bit in the preseason. So that'll be interesting. So my last team is the Buffalo Bills. It's kind of gone up and down. When they selected James Cook in the second round out of Georgia, I was surprised. I didn't think Cook would go that high, but we should have seen something like this coming because they tried to sign J.D. McKissic. He ended up going back to Washington. So they wanted that back that could, you know, that receiving back. But most people thought since he got picked in the second, he was going to take over, you know, that full role. And we see now that they've said Singletary's going to still take on, you know, a lot of the early down work. James Cook probably get, you know, 5-7 carries and more passes. And I guess Zach Moss will get whatever's left. It will really be interesting to see how that really goes. So if James Cook, you know, breaks off a couple long runs at the beginning, do they still hold true to giving Singletary, you know, a lot of those carries, or do they kind of go back and forth? Yeah, I want to see, because there's been talk too that Josh Allen's never really thrown to the running backs, but in defense of that, he's never really had a pass receiving back like this. So interesting to see how that will go. There's so many weapons on the Bills, you know, with Gabe Davis coming up too. And, you know, they have Isaiah McKenzie, Jamison Crowder, Khalil Shakir, rookie that will get some work. How they'll distribute all those touches running the ball and passing the ball is very interesting to me with that, you know, very high octane offense.
Yeah, I think tomorrow night is going to be an excellent. It's going to be just an excellent showcase and a display of everything we've been discussing for months now. I mean, we've been discussing Gabriel Davis and the Rams backfield and James Cook and Isaiah McKenzie and Josh Allen, how the new offense is going to look and Matthew Stafford's throwing arm. There's been so many. And now Van Jefferson's out. Who's going to be the wide receiver 3? Is it going to be Lance McCutcheon? Lance McCutcheon was the seventh highest graded wide receiver by PFF during the preseason, man. It could be easily Lance McCutcheon. He could be a waiver wire guy by week 2, man. It could be insane. I know it's hard to believe, a UDFA. I'm a fan. I don't know who isn't. But I mean, I'm going to go on a rant right now. There are so many things that have changed, I feel like, that are all kind of, it's kind of hitting me like a groundswell right now, because there are so many things that we're going to see by week 1. I don't remember feeling this way about the anticipation of watching just things come together. It's kind of like the T-1000 when he used to blow off a piece of his arm and then all the pieces started to come together and like form into like the one arm. Like, I feel like that's what we're going to kind of see, like everything kind of gravitate, because everything's kind of like in chaos right now. It's like the beginning of the universe and everything was just kind of in pieces and everything started to come together and take form and life was created. You know, I feel like that's what's happening right now. I feel like everything's in chaos. We've all been talking the shit out of it for fucking 8 months and it's all going to come together finally. That's my rant. I'm sorry. But my final backfield, sorry about the rant, is the Chargers backfield, primarily because we know who Austin Eckler is, right? RB1, that's not changing. He's top 5 pick, I think, in my book. But behind him, we got Sony Michel, who just came to town. Joshua Kelly, he was there before that, but I think he was there before that by, you know, by deference, by default. He was there because they had nobody else. Behind him, there's Larry Roundtree. It was going to be the Austin Eckler show. Sony Michel is there. I still think it's going to be the Austin Eckler show, but Sony Michel proved to be very good with the Rams last year. Darrell Henderson got injured, and he came in, and he helped get that team to the Super Bowl, and he's going to be there this year. And I still think that Sony Michel is one of the more under rostered players in fantasy football right now. People have completely overlooked Sony Michel. He was cut by the Dolphins. I thought he would stick with the Dolphins, but he's here on the Rams right now. And again, another guy I think that's going to be one of the players that people are going to be clamoring to the running to the waiver wire for by the end of week one.
Definitely. Yeah, I agree on that. I was very surprised that the Dolphins got rid of Sony Michel. You know, I know they have Raheem Mostert second, but I mean, injury prone also. So I would think they were going to keep both of them. So that did surprise me. So now I'll let you lead into the thin slicing segment, something you brought up, and go on ahead.
Right. So I brought up this segment to Brandon because it's something that kind of, like, it's the core of, I think, what a lot of fantasy analysts are. Thin slicing by definition is, okay, this is per Wikipedia. Thin slicing by definition is a term used in psychology and philosophy to describe the ability to find patterns in events based on thin slices, which are narrow windows of experience. The term refers to the process of making very quick inferences about the state, characteristics, or details of an individual or situation with minimal amounts of information, right? So we're basically having, we're having premonitions about the future based off of very small experiences, being exposed to very small experiences and having that kind of click with our subconscious, right? And like having those experiences tap on to the past of what we've gone through as analysts. We've been through fantasy football for the past 10 years, right? And there's always something that we're going to see when you play fantasy football or do anything for such a long time, whether it's your police officer or, you know, or a politician or whatever you are. There's going to be some instances where you do things and see things that relate to that position you're so experienced with that trigger something and get you feeling something about that. It's intangible. It's really unexplainable. But in fantasy football, I think we all see it every single year in all of our own ways. We all see something. We don't say anything about it because it's just a small thing. We don't want to say anything, get ridiculed about it, but it happens. It comes to fruition a few weeks down to the season. You're like, I knew it. I knew that was going to happen. I saw it happen in the preseason. I knew that was going to happen. And so I wanted to touch on this because I think it's something that's primal to us, you know, as fantasy analysts, is that gut intuition, that very human thing in a space filled with spreadsheets and numbers and very empirical structures where you're not allowed to go outside of the lines, where you're supposed to stick to the books and the percentages route run and the targets per route run. There's a very human aspect still to this, where all of this came from. So with that, I want to talk about my first thin slicing moment I had of the offseason was watching Skylar Thompson play in the preseason and seeing how comfortable he looked as a quarterback. Now, he looked really good throwing against zone coverage specifically. He looked very comfortable. He looked very comfortable against pressure. He threw very well against pressure. He layered passes into zones very comfortably. I am not saying I saw him throw against every single type of coverage, but from what I saw, it was a thin slicing moment. Something clicked with me. It sat very comfortably with me. And I think he offers more than Teddy Bridgewater does as a passer. Teddy Bridgewater, we know what he is. He's a game manager who's very, you know, he's just bland. People know how to plan for him, but Skylar Thompson offers more than that as a quarterback. And look, Tua, you know, we'll see how it works out with him. I think, you know, I'm not sold on the guy. I'm not sold on the guy right now. And he hasn't done anything. I've watched him last year. I don't understand the people why they're so excited about him. I'm not very excited about him. I watched him, just doesn't do anything for me. So I'm just saying I had a window. I saw a thing where Skylar Thompson was playing as the lead quarterback for the Dolphins sometime later on this year. I know it deserves ridicule, but again, these are very, very small windows that we go on. So that's my first one.
Very good. So my first one, it's actually, I brought it up to you as an example. First, it was Colin Johnson for the Giants. When he was with the Jets, I thought he was going to, you know, catch on. I really liked him at Texas, but he was finally really showing out with the Giants. And the Giants, you know, Kenny Galladay, we don't know what he is. A lot of the receivers are injured. Sterling Shepard's coming back from injury. There was talk Darius Slayton would get cut. Kadarius Toney coming back from injury. Wando Robinson, I'm excited about, but he's more the slot guy. So since Colin Johnson was hurt out for the year, it's David Sills because they openly talked about Sills and Johnson playing well enough not to just make the team, but to get significant snaps. So even though other players on that in that wide receiving core is paid more, I could see them in their production looking very good on the field. And showing better effort than a lot of times Kenny Galladay has, that David Sills could get some serious playing time for the Giants in that wide receiver rotation.
And that's such a perfect thin slice because, Kenny Galladay, what we've seen reports of him being stiff as a mannequin, looking like a mannequin out there and like having no desire to really play. And Sterling Shepard, he's coming back, but he's coming back from an Achilles injury. And Kadarius Toney, he's always injured. And you got Wandale Robinson, who's a rookie, right? So, David Sills, why not? Right? Why not? If he's playing good, he's going to see playing time, right? It's easy path for there. Easy path for it. My second guy is Greg Dortch, wide receiver out of from the Arizona Cardinals. Smaller guy, I believe he's 5'7", but he played really well. I think he was splitting time with Andy Isabella. Andy Isabella was drafted by the team about 4 years ago. He got a lot of play time this offseason, but I think it's primarily because the Arizona Cardinals were trying to shop him, get rid of him, get some trade value for him. Nobody bit, so they kept him around again. But I think Greg Dortch, in the off, he has a path. He has a path to playing time with Antoine Wesley on the IR, DeAndre Hopkins being suspended. There's a path for him to see some playing time in slot snaps. Now, I don't know how this is probably for really deep fantasy leagues, so don't go picking him up in 12-team leagues. But in the preseason, 3 games played, 27 targets, right? 164 yards and 1 touchdown, right? He put together some solid numbers. He's a slot player. He averaged 11 yards per reception. So with both those guys out, with both Wesley and Hopkins out for the time being, I think we're going to see some Greg Dortch. I think Greg Dortch is going to put his name out there. And who knows, he might build some momentum. He might become a valuable slot player for the Arizona Cardinals. Maybe. I don't know. We'll see. That's my second guy, Greg Dortch.
Yeah, so my second guy, I don't feel nearly my last two guys, I don't feel nearly as great about. But one player is Penny Hart for the Seahawks. He kind of flashed their last preseason game, even if it was with Drew Locke. So a lot of people think that they are going to go a lot more 2 tight end sets for Seattle this year, but I could see them being behind, going to 3 wide receivers. And there's DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, but that third wide receiver is really up in the air. And also with quarterbacks that aren't nearly as good, a lot of times they look for the middle of the field. So, either tight end or slot receivers going across the middle could be very important. Like you were saying, this isn't for 12 teams. This is for much bigger leagues or stashes or maybe even dynasty. But I think Penny Hart, of all those other wide receivers they have there to vie for that third spot, I think he's just as easy to get there in there. So, he's a name to kind of keep watching.
And my third final two guys, actually, they're on the same team, are Justin Watson and Jordy Fortson. Of the Kansas City Chiefs. Justin Watson is, I believe, fourth-year wide receiver. And Jordy Fortson, I believe, is, a third-year tight end. Justin Watson is an absolute athletic freak. And Justin Watson is very athletic as well. Justin Watson, right now is currently lined. He's second on the depth chart behind Mecole Hardman, right, on the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, this whole Kansas City Chiefs wide receiving core, I mean, everybody outside of Travis Kelce, Juju Smith-Schuster included, there's no clear lead wide receiver. And I don't count Juju as a lead wide receiver. I mean, he's experienced, but I don't think he's going to be the apex 24% target share wide receiver. I don't feel it in my bones. I don't see it. They have Marquez Valdes-Scantling. Sky Moore, rookie, small school guy. I like him, but, we'll see. We'll see. Who else is there? Mecole Hardman, right? There's nobody really that is going to stand out on this team. Now, Justin Watson played above 60% of his snaps out of the slot in the preseason. He's a massive guy. Massive guy. Seam stretcher. You're playing cover two. Middle of the field open. Justin Watson. Stretch the field for a huge gain. He can play at the flint. He can play short. He can play flat routes. Short slant routes. I was watching him all his routes run in the preseason. He's a big guy. He's just so great. Patrick Mahomes saying nothing but good things about him in the preseason. I just keep him on your radar. He's just so enticing on this offense. This guy offers so much athleticism on such a good offense. He really fought hard to make the team. He has a chance. Just keep him on your radar. The second he starts to make noise that 1 week, just go ahead and add him if you have chance in a deeper league. Jody Fortson is a tight end. This is a nod more to tight end premium leagues. If they start using him more out wide and in the slot as a receiver, he's not a blocking tight end, but he's gonna be classified as a tight end in your leagues. Jody Fortson, if he emerges out of this ambiguous wide receiver core, just saying, remember Jody Fortson. He is the biggest dart throw in the history of fantasy football, but just remember the name. That's it. Those are my guys.
Yeah, I think Fortson definitely is a good one. Because, you know, like Mahomes said, they're going to spread the ball around. And, you know, if you're, especially a tight end, need someone, you could throw him in there just hoping for a touchdown or something from Mahomes. So my last one is Tim Jones, wide receiver for the Jaguars. He was signed as an undrafted free agent last year. This year in the three preseason games, I don't count the Hall of Fame one because that, you know, not many people play and it's pretty sloppy. So over three games, he has 13 receptions and over 200 yards. I know a lot of times that's against, you know, lesser competition, but I mean, he's playing with lesser quarterbacks too. We think the main three, well, should be the main three are Christian Kirk, Marvin Jones, and Zay Jones. But who knows, Tim Jones could maybe, you know, move up in the third wide receiver role. I was surprised that they cut Laquon Treadwell, then they traded Laviska Shenault. So he's that next guy after those three. So he's someone definitely to keep an eye on if he can, you know, he did enough to get on that 53-man roster. If they see a lot of that in practice, they might put him in the lineup with Trevor Moore. And if he can get some connection with Trevor, who knows, he could be able to, you know, take some snaps possibly away from Zay Jones or in four wide receiver sets, get some of that. Another, you know, a deep, you know, kind of stash, but someone I would kind of look at for that Jags offense that I think is going to be improved and better than people think.
Good one.
Okay. And now I forgot that you only led that one segment. So the next segment is trade targets before week one in fantasy. I will go first, the ones that I'm trading for. I've been doing this in the offseason with Michael Gallup. I know he's going to miss, you know, the first few games, but we've seen the Cowboys, they have CeeDee Lamb. They like Jalen Tolbert, but who knows, you know, as a rookie. So Gallup's coming back. He's going to be very involved in that offense. So if I'm a contender or even dynasty, I want to get him because you can maybe get him fairly cheap because people, you know, with the injury and everything. And another receiver I'm looking to get before he has some good games is the rookie out of Cincinnati, Al Pierce, for the Colts. They've said that it looks like, you know, he might be running in some of the two wide receiver sets, if not that, three wide receiver sets. And they need a receiver to step up outside of Michael Pittman. The tight ends, you know, are not experienced or, you know, put forth that much production yet. So we know Matt Ryan's going to need to throw to someone else. And Al Pierce, you know, as a rookie going forward, could be a steal, that someone to, you know, be a wide receiver three or a flex on your team.
Michael Gallup, I absolutely agree. I mean, like, I had a rookie draft in May. And I was in the third round. I had the second pick of the third round in a rookie draft. And I was on the clock. And some guy had the fifth pick in the rookie draft. So he wanted to move up three picks, right? So he offered me Michael Gallup. No, he had two picks and he wanted to move up three picks. He had the fourth and fifth pick. So he wanted to move up. He offered me Michael Gallup and his two picks for the second pick in the third round of a rookie draft. I didn't hesitate. I was like, you're saying I could have these two picks and Michael Gallup and you want to move up two picks for those guys? Took it immediately. With those picks, I picked up Jalen Tolbert and John Mechie, right? So
great value.
I didn't understand it. And then I was in other drafts in startups. Jalen Tolbert being drafted before Michael Gallup. I don't understand it. Like, I know Jalen Tolbert had a, like, he's fine at, you know, at the school he went to, at a high dominator rating, the highest of the, all the entire rookie class, but you know, Michael Gallup is a great wide receiver. I don't understand what's going on. So anyways, I absolutely agree with that. And now Michael Gallup, practicing fully limited. At least he's actually limited now, I think. Right. And then Alec Pierce too. I don't know what to make. I like Alec Pierce, but I don't know what to make of that. The Colts offense. I don't know if they're going to have the relevant, even if he is going to be the second wide receiver, I don't know how relevant he is going to be in fantasy football, but hey man, if you can get the second wide receiver on any fantasy on wide receiver on any football team with Matt Ryan throwing the ball, go ahead and grab it. My trade for a guy, AJ Dillon. Still, people don't really grasp what he is going to be this year. People don't understand. He should be drafted. He should be drafted way higher. Every time I speak to somebody about AJ Dillon, it's always, oh, he fell to me. He fell to me in the 10th. He fell to me in the 6th. I got him in the 5th. I got him in the 7th. He fell to me. He fell to me. He fell in my lap. He fell in my lap. He just came down to me. No one understands what AJ Dillon is going to be. Go and you can get him. Trade Josh Jacobs for him. Just give Josh Jacobs for him. Antonio Gibson. Go trade Antonio Gibson for AJ Dillon. Trade some tight end you drafted in the middle rounds for AJ Dillon. Trade Dallas Goedert for AJ Dillon. Trade Dalton Schultz for AJ Dillon. You can do it right now. Go do it. People don't understand. AJ Dillon is going to have a minimum, and he's going to get more than this, but his minimum is going to be 230. He's going to get more than that. He's going to have more touches than that. He's going to be people are now starting to talk about it. You saw LaFleur, 1A and 1A in that backfield, not 1A and 1B. They're both going to see 230 touches at least, him and Aaron Jones, in different ways. They're going to be utilized in different ways. They're going to be fantasy RB1s. They're going to average 13 points. I have AJ Dillon averaging 13 fantasy points per game. Average. Go acquire AJ Dillon. You can get him for so cheap. He's going to be a solid, solid starting running back for you every single year. That's my trade for him.
Yeah, that's definitely a good one. And I'm just surprised with everything that's happened with the Packers in the offseason, you know, the injury to Lazard, and then, you know, Christian Watson being injured, not really get going. Romeo Dubs has had a little uptick, but and with them talking about, you know, they're both going to 1A, that he hasn't kind of moved up in drafts, because I've seen, you know, the ADP still going at least after the sits or in the sits, which I think is crazy because they are going to run the ball a ton. He's going to get receptions. You know, he's not a bad receiving back. And he's just a monster when he gets the ball. And you know, when it gets cold in Green Bay, they're going to want to give him the ball and let him run a ton, because we've seen, especially in the playoffs, when it gets cold, the weather gets bad, Rodgers doesn't necessarily have those big games, and then they have to depend on something else. Yeah. So I think that's great. So tradeaways, I have two. One is Chase Claypool. If I found some people that still like believe in the talent, still love him, I would try to trade him if, you know, you get good value, because I think George Pickens is eventually going to take him over on that. And I just don't know if he'll ever, if he doesn't this year, I don't know the production for Claypool. And then another player for me, a lot of people like, is Mike Williams. I think he's going to have a good year, but I don't think he's going to have the great year that people think. Keenan Allen's going to still get a lot of those touches. Austin Eckler. They talked about Palmer, about how he's going to be very involved. So he's going to take away some of those targets. So if someone's really high on Mike Williams and thinks he is like a top 12 receiver, get all that value while you can before, you know, and also there's that injury history that he has.
All right. Man. Yeah. So this is like, wait, is this like a dynasty trade away?
It could be either.
Okay. All right, so my final one is tradeaway Antonio Gibson. So if you haven't been following along, Antonio Gibson's offseason has been a nightmare. It's been an absolute nightmare. It's been so tumultuous. Brian Robinson came onto the scene, drafted out of Alabama, day two pick for the Washington football team. You know, he pretty much took over the job first week of the preseason. And there were reports coming out of the camp prior to preseason football that he was competing. He was neck and neck with Antonio Gibson. Unfortunately, he got shot in a robbery. Brian Robinson did. Already, Brian Robinson off crutches. Now, I don't think Robinson is going to be back this month, right? but Antonio Gibson's fantasy value has spiked, right? Brian Robinson is probably going to come back sometime before midseason, I think. I'm not a doctor. I'm feeling the way things are trending right now. I think he's going to come back before midseason. If you can trade away Antonio Gibson right now for some higher A.J. Dillon, like I said earlier, if you can do that right now. I think you can pull it off. I think you can pull off that trade right now if you do it this week. But you have to do it before week one. He is a guy that is going to see his upside. We've already seen that last year, Antonio Gibson with J.D. McKissic was one of the most frustrating running backs. Carson Wentz doesn't throw the running backs, right? So already Antonio Gibson has limited receiving upside. J.D. McKissic is loved by the Washington football team. Ron Rivera stole him back from Buffalo as J.D. McKissic was about to sign with Buffalo. I think J.D. McKissic is going to be more involved on early downs because they still don't really have confidence with Antonio Gibson as an early down runner. Now he's going to have to do a lot, probably in 1 week or 2 weeks worth of work to prove his worth and that he is a reliable runner with the ball as far as ball security goes. But I think J.D. McKissic severely caps Antonio Gibson's upside. So I think he has really no upside at all unless he breaks off a long run. That's pretty much it. Once Brian Robinson gets back, it's over. It's the Antonio Gibson show is over. So trade away Antonio Gibson right now while you can. Get A.J. Dillon if you can. Travis Etienne. Go get Travis Etienne right now if you can. Breece Hall. Right now, Breece Hall, people aren't too high on him. I'd rather have Breece Hall than Antonio Gibson. Get off Antonio Gibson off your fantasy team right now.
That's a really good one, the Breece Hall, because a lot of people are panicking because they're saying Michael Carter's going to get the early work and everything. So that is definitely a great one. So those are the trades, and we'll continue to do that weekly, Dynasty and Redraft. So we're going to end with two games we're excited to watch this week. My first one is the Packers versus the Vikings. They always seem to have very, interesting, exciting games. I want to see, what's Aaron Rodgers doing with those receivers? Is Romeo Dubs really going to move forward to be one of his top receivers? How are, they have the two backs? And then the Vikings, I'm more excited. I want to see what that new offense is. Are they truly going to start, running more what the Rams do with three wide receivers? Are they going to pass the ball more? I think Adam Thielen could definitely have a great season, especially for redraft. He's usually the guy that Kirk Cousins looks for in the end zone. So I think him and Jefferson could both be top 15 receivers if they both are healthy and they throw the ball. And then obviously there's still KJ Osborne there. And I want to see what that offense does with Dalvin Cook, a healthy Dalvin Cook, because we know, as the season goes on, he'll miss a game here or there. So mostly it's for the Vikings offense to see what they're going to do.
Yeah, I love it. I think I was looking at the slot rates for Van Jefferson versus KJ Osborne last year, and I think Van Jefferson far surpassed KJ Osborne's slot rates. Now with O'Connell there, I think we're going to see a lot more KJ Osborne on the field. So my first game is the Rams-Bills, and I spoke about it earlier. Just so much fantasy implications. I mean, just a great NFL game, just a beautiful way to start the year. Just a beautiful way to bring everybody together and watch a great football game. I think this is going to be a full-on fireworks show. We're going to get to see how Matthew Stafford responds to his elbow. We're going to see, all the things I talked about. I'm here for Lance McCutcheon. Let's see if it works out. Man, we might even see some Kyren Williams. I don't know, man. We might see some Kyren Williams sprinkled here or there. I'm looking forward to watching the rookie play. I love, he got a lot of shit last offseason because of his combine measurables. He's very unathletic producer output. But just a lot. We're going to see a lot put on the table. And, we're going to see James Cook. I have James Cook on a bench. It's going to be like that week one. You don't know what your guy's going to look like. So this is going to be his tryout for your fantasy team, right? Like, how is it going to look? What are we doing? Like, okay, do we have something to look forward to going to in week two? Can I maybe slot him in as a flex maybe as a week two, as a, RB2 and PPR formats? So, yeah, I think it's going to be plenty of fantasy implications. Gabriel Davis Twitter is going to be a nightmare if he has a bad game. I'm not going to show my face because I am part of that crowd, the supporters.
Yeah, that's definitely going to be a great game. Go off a little bit on it. for rookies, do you usually start rookies the first week, or do you want to see that what happens that first week, or does it just kind of depend on which rookies?
Yeah, it depends. Like, I think, you know, for the rookies on the Rams side, I'm not touching any of the rookies on the Rams side. Say, like, we're talking about the Saints, Chris Olave. I'm starting Chris Olave in week one in, like, say, 12-team, three wide receiver leagues, right? I think I'd be forced to start Chris Olave because that's deep enough that would warrant it. Who else is there? Like Garrett Wilson? I don't want to start Garrett Wilson.
Yeah, I don't either until I see what's going on there.
Right. Even Treylon Burks. Wouldn't want to start Treylon Burks. Yeah. Even in a 12-team, three wide receiver format. Wouldn't want to do that. So it all depends. It's all really relative.
Okay. Yeah. Fair. And I kind of feel the same way. You know, Chris Olave, I think, is going to, as a second receiver there, definitely I'm willing to start him. So the second game I want to see is the Cardinals versus the Chiefs. I think it's going to be pretty high scoring. I want to see what the Chiefs do without Tyreek Hill. Like we've talked, how are they going to spread the ball out? Is CEH still going to be the lead running back? How are they going to spread out those carries? And then with the Cardinals, they've got some new weapons there without D-Hop. I want to see, you know, Kingsbury let Kyler call some plays, you know, in the preseason. I want to see maybe if that helps him, you know, understand what's going on in the offense, because sometimes I think he just uses his, you know, athletic ability and doesn't really dissect the offense as well as he could. He's back with his Oklahoma, you know, teammate, Marquise Hollywood Brown. Also, I want to see, are they going to finally unleash Rondale Moore? Let unleash Rondale Moore in that Christian Kirk type role. Don't just throw him 2-yard passes behind the line of scrimmage all the time when it's so obvious what they're going to do. I think there's a lot, there should be a lot of scoring in this game, a lot of fantasy implications. So I'm very excited for that one.
Yeah, we're going to see a lot unfold in this one too. And also, like, you know, Zach Ertz, he was seen back at practice. He was dealing with a calf injury for the past month. You know, the calf injury, I feel like, you know, on a side note, it's kind of like this new epidemic injury that's been coming up that we saw last year. We saw a lot of players dealing with the calf injuries. And I never thought it was such a serious thing, but apparently it's a month long, like several weeks. Very, very, I hate that injury so much. It's like this new thing that's like coming through the league. So Zach Ertz was dealing with that. And a lot of people were saying Trey McBride's going to be the next man up. I wasn't so sure about that. Year one NFL tight end, first game, I was thinking more Max Williams. But anyways, we'll see what happens with Zach Ertz and the backup tight end. My final game is Niners-Bears. This is not going to be, you know, one of the higher scoring games on the NFL week one slate. But, you know, we have a lot to discern here. We have a lot to go through. We have on the Niners side, we have how Shanahan didn't show us anything in the preseason of how they actually intend to use Trey Lance. You know, I want to see, I think Trey Lance is a candidate to have at least 8 rush attempts per game this year and match Lamar Jackson's career average of rush attempts, primarily because when you look at him as a passer, he's not there yet. You look at his strengths, you look at how Kyle Shanahan runs the wide zone with a naked boot a lot, how he gets players in space. He's got so many different schemes. You want to see how they'll use Trey Lance? What's the rotation with Jeff Wilson and Elijah Mitchell? Do they tap into Tyrion Davis Price? Do we see some Jordan Mason? That'd be very nice. You know, how involved is Brandon Ayuk? Depending on game script, let's see what happens. On the Bears side, same thing. Justin Fields, athletic quarterback. They're gonna get him into space. Same thing, a lot of naked bootleg play action passes. The run game is probably not gonna be a factor as much as it is on the Niners side. That's one of their strengths. Bears this year with an offensive line, they're gonna run the game, they're gonna run the ball just to probably keep the defenses honest, but it's not gonna really serve them well. Let's see what Justin Fields does. Let's see how much he produces as a rusher, because I think he's gonna be one of the more, Brandon, you think he's gonna be one of the more underrated, overlooked fantasy assets. People have this bad taste in their mouth primarily because of the fantasy offseason echo chamber about the Bears, and they're going to be look bad and they're terrible and this and that. So, you know, people get carried away with that and it affects ADP and just general perspective. So this is going to be an interesting two unknowns, two QBs actually like having a real rookie year with, you know, the Bear, just Fields having a competent head coach somewhat, we'll see. And then Trey Lance getting a fair shot to have a full offseason as a starter.
Yeah, it's one of the more under the radar games, but there's a lot of storylines, like you said. You know, I think ever since they figured out the Jimmy G situation and keeping him. People have been a little leery on Trey Lance. I've, you know, actually at my draft, people were saying there that they give him like 3 games. I think they're going to give him way longer than 3 games, but they're, you know, it could very well be something to look at later in the season. So it should be a great week of football.
Brandon,
NFL, yes.
Can I ask you some fantasy advice?
Sure.
Okay, so I have Matthew Stafford in a 1QB league, and I see Justin Fields. See, Jalen Hurts got snaked from me. Trey Lance got snaked from me, and Justin Fields is still sitting on the waiver wire. It's a 1QB league, 7 bench spots. Matthew Stafford is my primary QB1. Should I pick up Justin Fields and stash him and drop Zamir White?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
I'll do that tonight. Dropping Zamir White tonight.
Yes. I like that. I like that. I like that very, very much. It's kind of like the perfect scenario. Is this a dynasty league?
No, or redraft.
Redraft.
Yeah.
Still, I like it in redraft because, you know, with the elbow of Stafford, you never know. And then Fields has that running ability, you know. And say if, you know, Stafford doesn't get hurt, you still have Fields. Say he, you know, goes well. That's trade bait for, you know, a team that might want him or anything. So I would definitely do that because I don't see Zamir White doing enough this year to really be able to play him in fantasy.
Is this guy a fantasy football analyst or is this guy a fantasy football analyst? Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. I'll pick him up tonight.
All right. I love it. So that's the show for tonight. Make sure to tune into our YouTube channel. We've gotten a lot of views on the film of the different players I posted that you've done. And also, we're at 49 subscribers. Let's get us over 50 subscribers by next week. So everyone enjoy the first week of the NFL, and we'll see you next week.
Better, guys.